Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Kimberly, and I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of August. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagrapevine.org, and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. This is today's Grapevine quote. Whereas I used to function at two speeds, fast and stopped, a daily fix of meditation averages those two extremes out to a more gentle and efficient cruise rate. La Canada, California, November 1989, from Stepping Into the Sunlight, Spiritual Awakenings. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. For one, I'm glad we have both conservatives and enthusiasts. They teach us much. The conservative will surely see to it that the AA movement never gets over-organized. But the promoter will continue to remind us of a terrific obligation to the newcomer. And to those hundreds of thousands of alcoholics still waiting all over the world to hear of AA. We shall naturally take the firm and safe middle course. AA has always violently resisted the idea of any general organization. Yet, paradoxically, we have ever stoutly insisted upon organizing certain special services, mostly those absolutely necessary to effective and plentiful 12-step work. Here's a reading from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. That's page 164. So this will be a two-speaker meeting. There'll be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. Our first speaker is Liz H. from Staten Island. Liz?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Very well, I'm Liz. an alcoholic and a proud member, actually, of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is a group called Common Solution. We with one, no S at the end, because we believe there's kind of one solution. I mean, there may be different ways to get there, but we believe in one solution, and that's get a relationship with a higher power. Because for the most of us in that group, we all tried it different ways and nothing worked until we had a higher power in our life. And however you get that God or higher power, doesn't matter, as long as that's where we get. Common Solution has been my group since 2002. It was formed in 1994, however, and it was in person, and it was a good meeting, and we went virtual during the pandemic, and we stayed that way. Things changed, members went different places, and we gave up our room to another group that was looking for to reopen and couldn't get back in their original room, so we gave it to them, and they have made much better use out of it than we could ever. They packed the room every week. So, and the church can use the extra money. So it worked out for all of us. I'm here in AA because all my attempts to drink normally just weren't working. And I didn't know that I was not drinking normally. I didn't know I was drinking alcoholically, let's say. I just knew I was drinking too much and that I kept messing up. And I kept saying to myself, let me try again tomorrow or whenever I got the opportunity to drink. I didn't drink alone a lot. At the time, I was working in Midtown Manhattan. I was born and raised in Brooklyn. And in 2008, it's actually 2006, I moved to Staten Island, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump over a bridge. You could pretty much walk to it if you're in good health. And I had made a lot of attempts to keep getting it right. I used to drink with the corporate folks. There was always, so we were in media, TV, radio, other big entertainment entities. Yeah, they would go out a lot and do happy hour and then do this big sporting event at the main arena out in Manhattan, and it was because and we would have a lot of fun. But my nights, I was always one of the last few to hang around. As long as I wasn't alone, I was still, as long as it was somebody still there, I was still at the bar or the club or the whatever wherever we were at the time, still drinking. And then somehow, either if I was with the corporate folks and one of them was the CFO, I would get a ride in one of those sedan limos that they would take you home, those voucher companies. But a lot of times I'd wind up on a subway, half passed out. And I still to this day, I've had a couple of close calls with crime because I was sleeping. And you know what? All those little things, and then people getting mad at me, and or waking up with the room spinning, and I had to go to work, or calling in and saying I don't feel well, and I'm going to be late again. I just have to wait for it to pass. And honestly, I really just thought I didn't feel well, and I just needed some time. Then I started waking up with the shakes. I had no idea at the time that if I took some liquor, I would probably get rid of those shakes, but I had no idea. And my goal every time I went out to drink was never to get drunk. Maybe a couple of times when I was depressed or mad at somebody, and I'd be like, I don't, I had, I just didn't care. But for the most part, I always went out trying to drink like a responsible adult. And I would walk in, I'd get all fixed up after work, before I went over and get the hair combed, the makeup all refreshed. And by the time I left, the mascara was running. There was no lipstick, there was no blusher, the hair was a mess, and I would be wobbling to the door. And someone, if it was the winter, I had to be helped along with my coat. And I'd have to find my way home in most cases. And there was a lot of other consequences that came with drinking, especially for women, and I shouldn't say especially. We all get into our own trouble. Men get into fights and women get fighted with sometimes. So, at some point, somebody was put into my life in January of 1997. It was kind of like a blind date. And on the third or fourth date, he announced to me he wasn't ordering drinks with me. And somehow I managed not to get drunk in front of him. I don't know how. The first night we went to dinner, I had two. And The next time, I think I had one or two, but that didn't last long. And on a third or fourth date, he announced to me he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's why he didn't drink with me. And I was disappointed. I was looking for a new drinking buddy. But that didn't work out that way. So now I had to try to even work harder not to get drunk. But that didn't last long. And he finally said to me one day, "I think you're an alcoholic." And then I didn't believe that. And I said, "Oh, no." And he gave me a pamphlet. I think at the time it was the seven questions. And I was saying, nope. You know, yes to other things, but nope to alcohol. And I could tell you if I pick up that pamphlet today, knowing now what an alcoholic really is, I would answer yes to all of them. And I think there's an even more extensive pamphlet with more questions. And I picked it up one year and I was like, wow, what a difference of what I can see now that I've been, someone took the time to bring me through the first step and of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And we did no writing at all. We did nothing. It was just a lot of questions going through that book and a little prayer that said, "God, please help me see my truth." Because I kept telling the sponsor from Common Solution, because I had had sponsors before that, and everybody had different methods for me. They had beautiful, wonderful methods that had been passed on to them. And I was going to a lot of meetings, go to step meetings, make phone calls, you know, have a sponsor. I did a little bit of service. Even in my first year, I joined a committee to do some. I was in Brooklyn at the time, and there was a beautiful spiritual breakfast they used to do. And I hopped on the committee, and it was a lot of fun. I helped with sober dances and decorating, all that fun stuff. I got to dance sober once. It was difficult at first, but the music moved me and the guys and the girls, and we had a good time. And I was starting to enjoy sobriety. But I had to tell you, after a few years, sobriety wasn't as fun anymore. And I was getting upset that I had lost it. I had lost that pink cloud. And my moods were up and down. They talk about a roller coaster. And yeah, I experienced that. One day I was very, one day I was really happy to be sober, and another day I wanted to drink a lot, often. I still wanted to drink. I still had that alcoholic mind that kept telling me, maybe now that you have some knowledge and education on alcoholism after listening in all these meetings, maybe I could drink again. You know, I just have to try harder to put it down after no more than two. You know, that sounds so easy. That sounds really easy for non-alcoholics. But I didn't know that when I drink, it's almost impossible for me to drink. Once it's in my system, it sets off a reaction that does something that takes away all my sensibility, all my responsibility. Well, I'm not responsible anymore. All I want is another drink. You know, and I'll do stupid things to get that last drink. I remember being out with some of my team at a lunch with my boss had taken us all to lunch, and I actually pretended when we got up to leave to forget my umbrella at my table. So I said, "Oh, I forgot my umbrella. I'm going to go back and get it." And I went back and downed the last of the drink. I don't think it was even my drink. It was somebody else's drink. That's where it took me. And it took me to really bad places because, you know, you're not thinking straight anymore and everything. I didn't black out. I remembered everything pretty much the next day, and it was horrible. So this gentleman that I met in January eventually in, you know, at some point said, "I'm an alcoholic." And in June of 1997, I had an incident. It was my last weekend of drinking and everything came to a head. And he had said to me, you need to stay away from me. And but he knew I was just severely drunk, and he called me the next day and he said, "I'm just calling to check if you're okay." And I said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "Would you take me to one of those meetings you go to?" And that started my journey. He left my life for good when I had 32 days sober. I thought I would drink over that, but nice people in AA got me, really helped me out with that and get past that. And actually, for some friends outside of AA too. But, so I spent the next 5 years going to a lot of meetings. I had a few sponsors. I was given pamphlets because I kept saying, "I don't know if I'm an alcoholic." And they gave me pamphlets and readings. But until I realized in hindsight that reading on my own was not going to help me have a spiritual experience, nor was it going to convince me that I was an alcoholic. Sitting down with a sponsor in 2003, about 5, 6 years later, when she took me through that book, because she had been through it with a sponsor and she had taken many people through it. By the end of More About Alcoholism, when she looked at me and said, Liz, are you an alcoholic? Unfortunately, with tears in my eyes, I said, yes. I couldn't, if I'm honest with myself, I had to admit it. I couldn't deny it anymore. And we went through the rest of those steps. And I did step four, and I saw things about myself I never knew before. I saw things in a whole different way. I was asked to say, God, please show me what blocks me from you and everybody else. And at the top of the page, and I would pray that every morning. And things came flowing, memories, all these things kept flowing. I mean, I was really being showed. I believe that when you seek God or your higher a relationship with some kind of spiritual power, things open up. Things will open up and you'll be on a path. I followed all directions eventually. I didn't start out that way. I was a little defiant, and my sponsor had to let me go because it wasn't working for her or me. And but then when I hit bottom again spiritually without picking up a drink, but it was painful, I said, can we try again? And she was patient enough to say, yes, we can. And it was a whole different experience. I didn't even get mad at her when she would tell me what she sees about me. I'd be like, really? In the past, I would get mad, like, how dare you talk to me like that? But she would say, you're a strong-willed, you're driven, you're this, you're that. And I'm like, digging my heels in and saying, I don't like this lady, but it all changed when I was asked, told to ask God to smash my ego, show me what blocks me, and help me to follow directions and go to any lengths for my recovery. They talk about that in the big book more than once, but they especially remind us when we get to step nine. Remember, we agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And that's what happened. And it was this time I finished my amends. It took a while. There's no race. Well, you really shouldn't stop. I found if you stop amends in the middle, it's really hard to pick them up again. And you could actually, I actually almost drank again over it. I was raging like I had ever been. When I was not in the program of recovery, which for me has to be the big book. And of course, with some 12 and 12, there's a lot of great stuff in 12 and 12 to elaborate on all of that and some other stuff. But I found going through that fourth step, admitting it all in five, asking God to remove these things and being willing, things started to really happen. I started to have weird coincidences, and things started by people in step nine were popping up that I hadn't seen in years that were on my list. I'd be on a bus and all of a sudden, heading to the train station in Brooklyn, and all of a sudden that guy I used to go with, there he is walking along the sidewalk heading to the train station at all. And I lost him. But one night on my way home, I got on the train and there he was smiling at me like, hey, look at this. And I was like, oh my God. The first thing I thought was, oh my God, God, you put someone, in one of those stories I always hear, how people you haven't seen in years all of a sudden pop up. But and it just kept getting better. And don't think things got perfect because there's a lot of growing pains, things that happen for the first time, things you see about yourself. I saw how selfish I was, especially with my parents, all the complaining and criticizing and judging because of what they didn't give me, because they had their own financial problems or they, my father got drunk a lot. He was an alcoholic. They would be fighting. There'd be, so there was always poor me. All the relationships that broke up in my life, here I was in my 30s and I still had never been married. I still didn't have that house. I still didn't have the kids and I still didn't have the salary I wanted. And that's all I could think of, always looking on the outside. But what I realized as time went on, that relationship with God, the prayer, the meditation, I was taught how to pray, not just from religion, but I was not from any particular religion. Now I was given prayers to the program. I realized that that big book has two prayers in step nine alone. Help God, help me do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. And there's another one. It starts with my creator, show me. There's three of them in step four, the fear prayer, the resentment prayer. I mean, there's just, let alone the third, seven-step prayer, 11-step. I mean, you can turn any one of those things, even in step 10, into a prayer when it's giving all the directions on how to stay sober permanently. How to stay recovered as well. How to be sober, not drink, and have a very contented life. Even when things go wrong, I can trust they're going to change. I don't want to kill myself anymore, like I did in the first few years, because I felt hopeless once again without a drink. That's what happened to me. I'm not saying that happens to a lot of people, but it happened with me, and it happens actually to a lot of people I met. That's how I have that in common. And through that, service entered my life. Okay, started with little things, like I said, joining these fun committees and being a follower, a member. I didn't have to be the chief. And then eventually I started chairing things. I chaired Intergroup Big Meeting for New York Intergroup. Later on, I was on the committee as part of one of the subcommittees looking for speakers. You know, that's okay. I've been GSR. I've been an Intergroup delegate. I'm now an officer for Staten Island. I'm the registrar. I was once the secretary. Who knows where I'll go from here? I've done some stuff for the area. I'm part of Area 49, SENI, Southeast New York. I've done some work for them. I go to their assemblies, and I don't even have to. I don't have a vote there, but I like to hear what's going on in my AA world, in my area. What's going on with the counties around me? Getting tips. I love that stuff. I take people through the steps now. I have spoken, speaking. I got to tell you, you can, and Grapevine, I'm looking at Kimberly's background. It says Grapevine here. It's great to go to a business meeting at your home group and say, hey, listen, if any of you have any Grapevines you've done and you're not using anymore, give them to me. Or let's give them to, I brought a pile of Grapevines into a rehab that I had a commitment with. And I got to tell you, there was 18 people in there. I fanned them out. They were just taking them like they loved it. Like, give me something to read other than, something they don't understand. And they had this reading pleasure, and we still do that. I have a little pile downstairs right now to give to somebody who's going into a rehab or jail or even the prisons. That's where these things belong once they're not used, or bring them into another meeting that could use some stuff on their literature table. So, I have to say, without AA, it's not all just one thing. It's a combination of everything. It's, that if I work the three sides of that triangle, the recovery, the meetings, the fellowship, if I do the unity, that's the unity. If I do the spirit, the service sides is, I do plenty of that, to the point where sometimes I've had to take a break, or I've had a sponsor say, no more commitments, Liz, for a while. Don't take on anything new. And it's okay to do that. And you have to say no. You can't just say yes all the time because no one else will take it. But I got to tell you, we need help out there. We need a lot of help. There's so many commitments that are open, and through that, what's the other side, fellowship, recovery, those 12 steps, I have to pray and meditate. I have to admit I've gotten a little lax on my daily inventory, which is a way of saying to God, okay, God, and I write it when I do it. Sometimes I do it in my head, because the sponsor I've had now, who's on the West Coast, and that's okay at this point, I don't recommend it for newcomers, but that's just my experience. Yeah, sometimes we just have to, do those things, everything. And as long as I keep up and I keep close to God, I'm okay. I have every confidence I won't drink without getting too arrogant and cocky about it, because it can pop up on you when you least expect it if I'm not spiritually well. So thank you, Kimberly, for asking us to speak, and I look forward to the next speaker.
Thank you so much, Liz. And there was just so much identification to your story. Like, you kind of talked about, like, everybody's first step is different. And that for you, you needed to work with somebody, and you couldn't do it alone. And I had that, similar experience as well in going through the book. And, with your spiritual experience, like, you sought, and then your higher power showed up, and how you use, like, the different prayers of each step as tools for life. Like, those are our new tools. We don't, we don't pick up the bottle anymore. We'll go to that fourth step prayer. We'll go to that seventh step prayer or that ninth step prayer. So thank you so much, for sharing that. So now I have a few announcements before our second speaker. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store and on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project, which allows you to help us help others by providing the magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcasts, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platforms so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our second speaker is Brian, also from Staten Island.
How you doing, guys? Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank
Hi.
You, Brian.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Kimberly for the opportunity to speak here. And when I say that, I'm kind of lying because I never like to speak on Zoom or in public. But if I give God enough time to get in between me and those thoughts, then I settle down. I want to tell you that I'm sober through the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and these 12 steps. And it absolutely, positively has nothing to do with me. I'm a bum from the Bronx who got sober by with the nice people who took me in. I'm a repeated at this program. That's not necessarily the way everybody goes, but it was my story. And I'm the type of guy, when I drink, I have no thought of anybody or anything except to drink. And what happened was I had a problem with it. I came in for my then fiance and my job. And those are wonderful ways to start, but they're poor ways to stay. And eventually I used half measures avail me nothing. And I used half measures and I went back out. And I'm not the type of guy that drinks and comes back in a day or comes back in a week, a month. I didn't come back for almost 8 years. And when I came back, I was pretty much willing to do whatever I was told, because I had been beaten to a state of submission that told me that my way wasn't working and I need to rely on something else. And that something else was God, AA, and these steps. So a little background. I had my first high-class drink of a wine that never met a grape in its life behind Sam's Candy Store when I was about seventh or eighth grade. And we talk about stop signs in AA. And my first one was I didn't drink. I guzzled. I got violently ill, propped up against my door. They rang the bell and left. And I had started something that I didn't even know I had started, this what they call a phenomenon of craving, which I'm so grateful, not so much for the things that I have, but for the things that I don't have. And the biggest thing is I don't have the desire today to hurt myself with a drink. And that's because of you guys in this program. So after kickstarting this obsession with alcohol, you know, I went from hanging out with the guys playing ball and doing schoolwork and advancing in school to hanging out with the knuckleheads in the schoolyard. And they used to tell me when I was a kid, show me your friends and I'll know who you are. And I gravitate toward people that do what I'm doing. So I started hanging out with guys that were doing those things. And I drank, and I drank excessively. I thought I was having fun. And I must say that I was having some fun for a bit of time. But then things took a turn and I crossed that line and I was never able to get back over it. I can't tell you when it was, where it was. I just know that it was. And And the reason I know that is because guys and girls that I was growing up with, they started to go to college, they started to form relationships, they started to get marriages and buy homes. And the only thing I was doing was sitting on a bar stool, you know, saying, you know, I wish I could be them, but, you know, I'm not really interested in putting the effort in. This goal goes, I was taught a long time ago that AA is basically a spiritual kindergarten. And that when I first drank, that's where I stunted my growth spiritually, mentally, and physically. And when I came here, I had to, my first sponsor, and God loved him, I am eternally grateful to the people in the Bronx that I got sober with and my first sponsor. I worked a program with them in the 12 and 12. And at that time in the Bronx, it was only one clandestine meeting of the Big Book. And it was on a Saturday night, attended by very few people that I ever saw at other meetings, but who, the one time I went there, I just couldn't grasp it. So the people I were hanging out with were doing the work through the 12 and 12, which was a great way to start. Like I say, I'm eternally grateful to those guys and girls. But when I drank, I realized that all my hopes, dreams, and aspirations were slowly but surely dissipating. And here's the crazy part to this. I never wanted to blame alcohol. I wanted to blame her, my home life. My father died from alcoholism. I saw guys in AA when I was a kid, but he had other problems, and you can't put the cart before the horse. And he didn't take care of his alcoholism first, and he died from alcoholism. And and part of that for me is that I am my father's son. You know, the minute I picked up a drink, I set something in motion that I had no idea where it was going to take me. And I heard in AA, you know, a man takes a drink takes a drink, and a drink takes the man. And that's exactly what happened to me. So these people were growing up and I was growing down. And eventually I came to a point where my morals were falling faster than my drinking could even keep up with. You know, when I say I was a bum, I was a bum. I thought I was not doing any harm to anybody or anything. I actually got engaged when I was in my young 30s, and I took that girl on a hell ride for the next 8 years. I tried to get sober in the middle of it, but it didn't take because I was doing things my way and not AA's way. And what happened was I went back out. She had to move 1,000 miles away, and I was just another excuse for me to run rampant with a drink. And you do what you do, you get what you get. I was at that time, I was willing to pay the consequences, and there were consequences. And I can tell you with assurance that at the end, the only two things left in my life were my mom and my job. And my job had me on a skateboard and a banana peel and was pushing heavy toward the door. And my mom, who had that hurt look in her eyes, like, why are you doing this to yourself? And it was that look that got me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Long story short, I was about ready to be fired at work, and I got a reprieve from, I'm not a rocket scientist, I'm a common laborer. I got a reprieve from the boss and union representative, and it was my last shot. And this is the crazy thing about alcoholism. I knew that I was about to lose a job, that I'd already lost my girl. I was about to lose a job that I knew I really needed to keep going. And yet still that Friday, I went out and drank. And I drank for the next 3 days. And I can tell you what happened was I was lived on one side of the Bronx. I went back to the other side where I was living at one time with my mother, and I crawled back into my mother's bed like a scared little boy. And what happened was this. She brought me in. I called in work on Monday because I knew that I couldn't make it. And I called in work, and then I was in her bed, and she came in and she brought me soup. And like I said, she had that look in her eyes, like after watching her husband die from alcoholism, and now she's watching her eldest son. And what happened was I saw that look, and something sparked in me. And I knew that if I didn't do something right then and there, that this was not going to turn out good. I'm the type of guy that drinks and is going to wind up in a box under the Brooklyn Bridge in February. And this is not going to go well. I know this about myself. To thine own self, I have to be true. I don't need to worry about how others do things. I need to know to myself, I have to be true. And what happened was when I saw that look, I picked up the phone because I had remembered certain things about Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is what I remember. If you're in a place where you want to do something to change your life in regard to alcoholism, and you have no other recourse, call New York Intergroup. So I called New York Intergroup, and I got on the phone, and I'm going into my tale of woe for about, you know, maybe 30 seconds, and I got this gruff old Irishman on the phone, and he said, "Buddy, buddy, buddy, listen up. Can you get over to the Throgsneck meeting at 7 o'clock? And it was 6:20. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Good luck, buddy." And hung up the phone. And that began my journey. I got up out of bed. I drove to the other side of the Bronx. I still remember the two people that were standing at the gate. God bless them. I went into the beginners meeting. And what happened was this. I sat in the back. It was 7 o'clock. I stayed for the meeting. And one of two things that they said at the end of the meeting, stay for the next meeting. We have a three speaker open meeting. Please stay. And one of two things was about to happen. I was either going out to smoke a cigarette or I was going to go on the Bataan Death March. And as I was walking out the door, we've talked about this, there are signs. And my first sponsor used to say, "Yeah, you see stop signs and you put your foot in the gas." Well, it just so happened that God intervened on my best behalf. And as I'm going out the door, this guy I know from the other side of town is walking in happy, joyous, and free and smiling like a clown in the circus. And I'm like, I cannot believe this. And he walks right up to me and he says, "Hey, how's it going out there? Little problem with the sangria?" And I said, "Johnny, it's got," and I basically broke down. I said, "It's got a lot more to do than that." And I looked at him and he looked at me and I said to him, "Johnny, where you been?" And he goes, "I've been right here waiting for you." And that began a road that I've stayed on consistently for the last good amount of years. And that's only because I surrendered to the disease of alcoholism. They used to say back then, surrender and win. And I said, "Okay, I surrender." And what happened was he temporarily sponsored me and got me up and running in a day. Not in the big book, but 90 meetings in 90 days. Get numbers, give your number. I was told within, I went to my first business meeting and he said to me, "You're going to volunteer to make coffee and greet at the door." And I said, "I don't really want to make coffee and I really don't like people." And he said, "Yeah, I know, we won't be using your information here." And I said, "Okay." He says, "You're willing to do whatever it takes?" And I said, "Yeah, so we'll start there." And then I heard pithy little things from old timers in AA, like they would see me in the back making coffee and they would say, "You know, there's sobriety in that coffee pot." And I'd look at them like they were cracked, but they were telling the truth. There was sobriety in that coffee pot because it reeled me in. And then I started to greet people at the door. And I remember one of the first guys I ever sponsored, an older guy than me, I said to him, "Otto, why is it that you came to me to ask you to sponsor?" And he said, "Because when I came back the second time, you remembered my name." And I never forgot that lesson. You know, I always try to remember a newcomer's name. And in these days, give them a call because, you know, that 10,000-pound phone is sometimes hard for a new guy to pick up. So I make it a point now, I was taught by guys who since have taken me through the book, that I should reach out first. Don't expect them to reach out. So that's what I do. And so I get up and running in AA, and I'm eternally grateful. I was taken through the 12 and 12. And life was cruising along, and I was sober a good bit of time. And I was single, and I went to an AA dance at Sini in 2008. And a girl walked across my vision, and I got all blurry after that. And I threw my whole life in with her not long after that. And things started to change. And she was a big book girl from Staten Island, and I was this 12 and 12 guy from the Bronx. And what happened was when we threw in all together, I'd come out here to meetings, and I was hearing Italian and they were speaking English. And I was like, something's not right here. What do I got to do? So I talked with my first sponsor and he said, "Brian, I would suggest that maybe it's time for you to get new tools for your toolkit and that you go through the program with somebody out there in the book." And I have since been through it a couple times. I actually have a sponsor who's about to celebrate 50 years. He too is in California. I got him from a Zoom meeting 6 years ago. And I have to make a little video for him. His family reached out to me, so I'm going to do that. But yeah, and the guys in Staten Island welcomed me. The people here, I was told a long time ago, wherever you put your roots in AA, you'll grow. And that's been the truth. So I come out here and I go through this book with a couple guys, and the last guy who I'm still is in my network, because you know, if there are, you think there are no cliques in AA, you're making a mistake. They just call them networks now. And I gravitated to the people that are doing what I'm doing, and that still holds true. And I remember that I walked shoulder to shoulder with this group of guys and girls, and but I remember my sponsor at one point telling me that you know, all those things that you threw away when you first drank, you know, your compassion, your patience, your tolerance, your love, fellow man. Well, we're going to go back and grab them out of the garbage and dust them off, because they're all going to pertain going forward. So I did. I did mostly what I was told. They used to say the suggestions are free. The ones you don't take are the ones you will pay for. And I found that to be true. So I tried to take most of them. And so I got into this book with these guys, and I found that one of the two things that were different for me was morning meditation and inventory. So I started to practice those two things. I had been hitting my knees from day one. Day one, they said, and I said, why my knees? And they said, because you have to humble yourself before this power that's greater than you. You have to ask for his help or her help every day. This is a daily retreat. And I said, okay. So I did what I was told. I still hit my knees. And I came to a point in time where after I had met Liz and she was practicing these things through the book, and I went through with this guy, he said to me about, showed me how to meditate. My wife showed me how to meditate. He showed me how to do inventory. I had a little ups and downs with the inventory because I was a guy, well, I don't see that in the book. And then he would show me in the book. And then he would say, this is what we do here. What they do in other places, when you're with those people, that's what you'll do. But this is what we do here. So I did that. And I started, and I've been pretty consistent with it for the last few years. I share it with a gentleman who has been sober in Florida for quite a bit of time. And, you know, it goes back to the stuff you learned as a kid. What you put into this is what you'll get out of it. You know, I didn't realize at the time that this was going to be not only a revolution, but an evolution. You know, I have to constantly change for the better. It's basically a lot of times two steps forward, one step back. But as long as I'm willing to make spiritual progress every day, you know, to be patient, tolerant, kind, loving, compassionate, understanding, show some empathy. You know, I tell my wife all the time, one of the biggest problems I've had here, and I say it to her way too often, is I know and you should. I know very little, and you should do what's best for you and yours. And so when I came in, I surrendered. I win every day that I don't pick up a drink or every day diamonds. No, I get a couple stones in there. But the great part about this is I'm not obsessed and compulsed by the phenomenon of craving in order to hurt myself with a drink again. And just to move it along here a little bit, so now I come out here, and my wife is, as she mentioned, she's very involved in service. And so I jumped on board, and I've done a few things here in the group and below the group level, and actually involved with some of the people here today. And, you know, I love when people say, well, you know, I never could repay AA for what they've done for me. Well, you could do a little something. You might not have to pay everything back, but you could do a little something. And as people know, probably 10% of AA does 90% of the work. And that's pretty much the story in a lot of things in life. And until you can accept those things and not worry about what others are doing, but worry about what you do and take care of your end of the street, there are things possible. And there comes a point in time where, you know, you find your niche, you find what it is. And then once you get comfortable in it, it's time to rotate out, and you have to move forward. And, but I'm definitely a satisfied customer. Like I said, and I'll tell you just briefly some of the things I've learned here that pertain to me. That happiness is not a function of money, power, or social status. It is a function of family, friends, and spirituality. That great things are achieved when we put the effort in to do them, and that everybody has the innate ability to help somebody else. And I found that to be true, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, people were doing things for me that I couldn't even begin to believe. And there was nothing in it for them except them staying sober and being good human beings. So whenever I get involved with new guys, I always tell them, you know, my two of my goals here are just basically for me to get you closer to God or whatever your power is, and for you to act like a gentleman. And sometimes I'm a little bit successful and sometimes not, but you know, I just am responsible for effort and not outcome. I leave the rest up to God. I want to thank Kimberly for asking me to speak today, my wife.
Thank you so much, Brian. I identified with a lot of your share. Like you talked about the lack of accountability and how like the drink just took you, and how consequences just even consequences didn't even get you sober. You know, and I too came in through the route of the 12 and 12, and then you know went through the big book. And I love that you talked about service and Sini, because as a result of practicing this program, we get to have healthy relationships. You know, we evolve, and that's the hope that we could we can give to somebody that is in the alcoholism. So I really appreciate your share. So now I'm going to ask, so please, let your friends know, about our meeting. It's an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind, both Brian and Liz spoke about service, service with cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And now I'm going to ask Liz if she can close the meeting with the prayer of her choice.
Okay, thank you. CPC, great committee. I'm actually on two of them. I didn't pick one, I picked two. I'd love to close with the Our Father, if we may. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.